we've got some huge issues to sort out, from the House and Senate frameworks for the Farm Bill to the announcement by the Treasury Department and IRS about clearing a pathway for corn-based ethanol to jet fuel. Big picture issues to break down this morning.
Live, it's raining cheese curds. Also rain via Farm Journal Studios. This is AgriTalk. This morning we'll begin with a conversation with Colin Peterson. We'll also chat with Pro Farmer Policy OG Jim Wiesmeyer. Then it's Jolene Ryson from the Iowa Corn Growers Association. And later, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm the handsome newsman, Davis Michelson. Now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Laurie.
All right, Davis Michelson. So I take it you got your cheese curds.
Got the curds, baby.
That's yes. Nice. That
Zanetta's
is
Better Cheddar makes the Kangas hop.
Oh, just, really?
Just a little tease for you there. Zanetta's Better Cheddar. Baby, I got it, too.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. Excellent. Welcome to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That is Davis. And bringing out the big gun for a couple of segments today, Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst.
Yeah, man.
We rely on Jim for a lot of information and a lot of perspective on AgriTalk, as does mm-hmm. Pro Farmer. But when we get the framework for farm bills from the House and from the Senate, we need to get him in here and spend some time with Jim trying to digest mm-hmm. exactly what it is we are learning from these frameworks, from the Chairman Marks, from the House, and from the Senate. And what are the odds that what we are looking at are actually going to turn into any legislation going forward? We're going to get mm-hmm. some help on that from Colin Peterson. I'm looking forward mm-hmm. to that conversation yeah. coming up in the next segment. And then, of course, at the end of the show, we're going to have a conversation with Jolene, the president of the Iowa Corn Growers Association, about the pathway for corn-based ethanol into sustainable aviation fuel. How clear is that pathway? And what exactly does yesterday's announcement mean for the ethanol industry? We'll talk to Jolene about that. Okay. And Henderson's coming up with some animal welfare stuff as soon as we're done with you and the news, dude.
Sure thing. Well, yep. I'm going to start with the National Weather Service weather outlook, which calls for severe thunderstorms and flash flooding over portions of the central and southern plains and Mississippi Valley today. It's raining right now in KC. Dude, woke up about, 4:35 a.m. to the sound of some rather aggressive thunder. That storm is moving eastward now. Cool and snowy in parts of the northwest, with above average and potentially record-breaking temperatures into the Ohio Valley and mid-Atlantic today. Chip, House and Senate committee leaders are planning meetings next week to discuss farm bill progress, but both proposals outline provisions that the other party has framed as non-starters. These are mainly in the food and nutrition and conservation sectors. The Senate bill, unlike the House version, does not place restrictions on the use of the Commodity Credit Corporation authority, which the House wants to limit to achieve budget savings. The House farm bill proposals are deemed far more farmer-friendly when it comes to production agriculture, Chip.
Yeah, we'll get the perspective from Colin Peterson and from Jim Wiesmeyer on that and exactly why that House bill does seem to be more farmer-friendly.
Well, Chip, USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service tested ground beef samples from states with confirmed cases of highly pathogenic avian influenza in dairy herds. This is something we were just talking about just yesterday over the last couple of days. All the tests, which were carried out at the National Veterinary Services laboratories, returned negative for H5N1 right. HPAI virus. So hasn't made it into the ground beef samples that USDA has inspected.
Exactly. We've got live cattle futures today up $2.50 to $3.50. Feeder cattle futures up $3 to $4 here this morning. A lot of it has to do with the, you can't call it a clean bill of health at this point. They're going to continue mm-hmm. to test.
Sure.
But so far it is a clean bill of health for the beef supply.
Well, along those lines, Cargill Meat Solutions issued a recall for more than 16,000 pounds of ground beef that might be contaminated with E. coli. The recall announced by USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service affects raw ground beef items purchased on April 26 and April 27, which were distributed to Walmart stores nationwide.
And the conspiracy theories are flying around on this. Yeah, E. coli. What a coincidence. You recall the Cargill beef right after they say that they haven't found any of the H5N1 virus in the beef supply. And so, no, I think on this one, when it comes to food supply, you don't mess with that. You don't mess with the news.
Yeah, no.
Around it. But, nonetheless, the conspiracy theories are flying hard.
Well, Chip, in the first quarter of 2024, unit labor costs in the United States non-farm business sector rose by an annualized 4.7%, that's significantly higher than the unchanged rate in the previous quarter and surpassed market expectations of a 3.3% increase. In March 2024, the U.S. trade deficit remained nearly static at a 10-month high, totaling $69.4 billion. Exports decreased by 2%. Meanwhile, imports declined by 1.6%, driven by lower acquisitions of passenger cars, industrial supplies, cell phones, household goods, and transport services. And Chip, signs are emerging that consumers may be beginning to reduce their spending in response to persistent high prices and interest rates. The trend is becoming apparent in the fast food industry, where several major chains have reported declines in same-store sales. Chip, over to you.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Hey, Greg, well, how's it going, buddy?
Good morning, Chip. We're getting good rain here in Kansas City, as Davis mentioned.
Yeah, thank God for that. We've got plenty of rain up here right now at this point, too, and it feels good. Feels good to get the ground soaked up. Okay, talk to me about what's going on in Denver.
You know, Chip, there's two animal rights friendly measures that will be on the ballot this November in the city of Denver, city only. The first would ban all slaughterhouses in the city beginning in 2026. That would make Denver the first and only city in the country to ban meat processing. And that's particularly targeted at Superior Farms, which is a lamb processor that kills about a 500,000 lambs a year and employs 170 people, Chip. And if that ban goes through and they have to close, then the city would have to reimburse Superior Farms, and that would total about $70 million. So National Western Stock Show, of course, is afraid such a ban could embolden a similar move statewide. As you know, JBS, Cargill, and some others are in Colorado. That second ban would ban the manufacture and sale of fur, Chip, in the city of Denver. And it would make it unlawful to manufacture, for sale, sell, display, distribute any fur product in the city. And effectively, you know, a lot of products, cowboy hats, handbags. National Western Stock Show says that would basically force all their vendors to skip the show. They wouldn't be able to sell anything there. So I want to mention there is a website campaign to stop these bans, and it's called just that. Stop the ban, protectjobs.com.
Okay, www.stopthebanprotectjobs.com. Excellent, Greg.
Correct.
Good work. Good work.
Thank you,
man. You bet. Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. We've got Colin Peterson and Jim Wiesmeyer coming up next here on AgriTalk.
We don't make the news, we render it. AgriTalk.
Davis, the green room has been an active spot here on AgriTalk recently, hasn't it?
A hub of activity here in the AgriTalk green room, yes.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm sure that they're getting set right now and maybe sharing some notes. First off, let's bring in Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Chip. Can't wait to hear what the good chairman, Colin Peterson, has to say.
And that Chairman Peterson is Chairman Colin Peterson from the Peterson Group. He joins us right now. Chairman Peterson, thank you so much for making time for us this morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Yep. Glad that you were here. So we got the chairman's mark from the House and from the Senate versions yesterday. Let's start with the House version of the bill, Chairman Peterson. What's most important for farmers to know about the framework that Chairman Thompson released?
Well, I think it's a, you know, it's a good bill in terms of the parts of it that affect the farmers and agriculture.
Okay.
The problem, from what I'm hearing, is that it's not, there's not going to be any bipartisan support for it.
Yeah.
Because of the thrifty food plan stuff that was put in the bill, to some extent, some of the conservation things, and also the limitations on the CCC. So I'm, which I think the administration has a problem with. So I think it's a good bill. It's just, it's the problem we've had from the start, and that is, in order to do the reference price updates and so forth, you need money, and this is how they've been able to figure out how to come up with the money, and it causes the trouble with the Democrats, from what I can see.
Yeah. Okay, I want to get to some of those poison pills, or what have been described as poison pills, in a moment, but how complete of a bill is this? I mean, is this ready for floor consideration?
Well, I think it's a good place to start, and
okay.
You know, as I understand it, what they're going to go through the markup process, so the members will have an opportunity to offer amendments and work the will, which is the way it should work. I mean, that's what I did back in 2007 when I was chairman. We marked it up in subcommittee, and everybody had an opportunity to offer amendments and vote on things and so forth. And so I think it's a good place to start. You know, I don't think that Glenn saw this as being, you know, that it's inviolate, that it has to, can't be changed. You know, I think he put this out there as a place to start, and the members have an opportunity to try to amend it to however they would like.
Okay. So the poison pills, you mentioned them, it's nutrition, it's around conservation. Are those the two big issues that Chairman Thompson has written some changes in that Democrats don't like?
Well, I wouldn't call them poison pills.
Okay.
You know, I don't, you know, it's a way for them to come up with the funding. You know, most of the money is in the nutrition title, so it's pretty hard to come up with money without doing something there. There's also a lot of money in conservation. So, you know, this has been what I've said for the last year, that the problem with this is, where are you going to get the money to make the improvements that's politically palatable? And what I'm hearing, they have not come up with it yet. So I think what they're planning on doing is getting it out of committee on a partisan basis, and then trying to figure out how they can move it on the floor. I don't see how that's going to happen, because you got 15, 20 Freedom Caucus people that aren't going to vote for a farm bill, no matter what's in it.
No matter what.
And so without some Democrats, I don't know how you move this thing on the floor.
Well, that's, you're starting to answer what's going to be close to my last question, and that is the timeline on this. You don't see the 118th Congress taking this bill up, is what I just heard.
Well, I've been saying that for a year. I just don't see the pathway here.
I was hoping that your attitude was changing here, but it's not, huh?
It's what?
Yeah, your attitude and your ideas on the timeline for this. It's not getting the frameworks out. That's not really changing your ideas about the timing of the bill, is it?
Well, not from what I'm hearing, but I mean, I want to commend the chairman for setting a markup date and for getting this out there. I think we've been encouraging that process to happen. You know, nothing is going to change until we start actually working on this. You know, and I want to give GT credit. He has worked harder than anybody I've ever seen. Yeah. I've been all over the country talking to everybody, but he's got a tough situation when they have such a close majority, and you got people on both sides that are pretty extreme, and it's not easy.
Right.
So he worked as hard as he can, and he's done the best that he could do, and we'll just have to see where it goes.
Okay. So the framework that we got from Chairwoman Stabenow, how close is that to a complete bill? It sounds like it's more just of a kind of a hitching post for different bills at this point. Is that right?
Well, they got everything in there but the kitchen sink, from what I can tell. Every idea that ever could been floated, you know, and normally this stuff, the way it works is normally this stuff was worked out at the staff level. You know, 90% of what's in that, what she put out, you know, that's normally the stuff that's worked out at the staff level on a bipartisan, bicameral basis before it ever gets, sees the light of day. But in this environment, you know, there's just no process to allow that. So I think the Senate is kind of just laying out there, at least the Senate Democrats are laying out there all the different ideas that have been brought forward. I think a lot of those are not going to be supported by the Republicans in the Senate. So that you got problems, you know, within the body itself, I think. And then you got big problems with the Republicans in the House with some of what's in there. So that's another complication. So I just don't, you know, they can work it out if they wanted to, but it doesn't seem at this point that people want to get off their respective ledges.
Yeah. Jim?
Well, if you do delay, if you have to have another 1 year extension, Chairman, it's not going to get any better in a new Congress and potentially a new White House, because the debt limit, bill is going to have to be, considered. And we could be, rather than a budget neutral bill, a cutting bill again. So why wait? Why wait?
Well, that's a very good question. But, the other aspect of this, you know, is there's a difference in, the urgency of this between the North and the South. Up here in our part of the world, you know, there's not any big urgency that I've been able to pick up from our folks here in the Midwest. They got a reference price increase that with the provisions we put in the 18 bill, they're going to get another one next year. They've kind of come to a conclusion, well, it's going to be nice to make some of these changes and update some of this stuff, but frankly, we can live with what we got. So there's just not a lot of pressure up here. In the South, it's different, and that's another issue. At the bottom line here, guys, the problem is this, is there are no Democrats left in farm districts. That is the biggest problem. Most of the farmland of the country is represented by Republicans. You've got Democratic members that have some agriculture in their district, but it's not what elects them or diselects them. Right. So they don't feel a lot of pressure because they're elected by suburbs and cities as opposed to the rural parts of their districts. And that's the underlying big problem here, is you don't have a setup for bipartisanship in the way things are structured. And I don't see how you put pressure. You know, some Republicans have said, oh, all these Democrats are going to have to vote for this because their farmers are going to demand it. Well, they don't have enough farmers, frankly, to make any difference in most of those districts. There's only five or six of them anyway. So I just don't see this thing lining up at this point. I hope I'm wrong, but I just don't see it.
Yeah, there are a few, very few, that are on the House Ag Committee. You know, I'm looking at District 13 in Illinois, Nikki Basinski. Yep.
Yeah, her.
And then you got Sorensen, too.
Yeah, Sorensen. Yeah, you got Sharice Davids.
Yep.
Has got some ag land.
Angie Craig.
You got Andrew Craig. You got Davis in North Carolina.
Yep.
And that's about it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. But maybe Caraveo in Colorado.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, but, you know, because of their, I don't know. I don't know the districts in Illinois as well as I do in Kansas and Minnesota. But I think that district that Basinski has
Okay.
Goes over into the old Jerry.
Yeah, Chairman Peterson, we unfortunately are out of time. Thank you so much for your time. Welcome to the Soy Checkoff Check-In. This week we are talking with Gary Berg. Gary is a United Soybean Director and an Illinois farmer. He has served 7 years as a soybean checkoff farmer leader. Gary also serves on the U.S. Soybean Export Council, Strategic Utilization Team, and the USA Poultry and Egg Export Council. Gary, I understand that you serve as the priority area coordinator for the Checkoff's Health and Nutrition Priority Area Working Group. Now, last month, we talked with farmer leaders about demand for soybeans. What is the Checkoff doing to increase the supply of soybeans?
Well, farmer leaders invest in a lot of research to improve soybean health. If you improve soybean health, more than likely you're going to help your soybean yields eventually. And so we coordinate with leading agronomists and extension researchers to try to deliver current recommendations for a real-time production environment, you know, that can change every year. The last study we did, we were getting a return of $12.34 on every dollar invested in the checkoff. So we're always trying to do all we can to help farmers out.
Well, yeah, and if they can see the proof that they're getting a return on the investment that they're making in the soy checkoff, it is a valuable piece of information for them. There's no question about that. Again, we are talking with USB Director Gary Berg on the Soy Checkoff Check-In. Gary, the soy checkoff, it's great at creating those new avenues to increase preference for U.S. soybeans and to drive innovation. What are some of the traits and best practices the checkoff follows with research and development? What are you really looking for?
Well, some of our plant breeding research, you know, they dive in the genomics and molecular genetics and things that are way above my head, but eventually it's going to help us get that monitor to show higher yields. You know, that the checkoff funds about 25% of the public soybean research. So, you know, they're doing research all the time to try to help out with things like drought and disease and insect infestations, anything we can do to help the farmers get a few more bushels, that's pretty sustainable.
Yeah, and some of the work that's being done, Gary, is absolutely fascinating to me. The new research to address the challenge of flower drop on soybeans. If you can get the bean plant to hold on to more flowers, they can make more pods and make more beans. So tell us about that study. It's aimed at improving soybean yield through reducing the physical stress response of those plants, right?
Oh, absolutely. That's, in fact, that's one of the ongoing research projects that excites me the most. It's really exciting. I think a lot of farmers, they know that we lose flower drop, but I don't think a lot of them realize how much. You know, even in an average year, we lose about 30% of the flowers. And in a tough year where you got lots of heat, lots of drought stress, you could lose up to 80% of your flowers. So can you imagine some of the extra yield that we could get if you could retain just 10% of what we normally lose? And we're doing, it's not just in one place. There's a lot of research being done at Texas Tech, Kansas State University, University of Missouri. So we're kind of spread out. So I'm really excited about that project.
Yeah, it's really cool. Lots of potential on that one. Let's talk about growing healthy crops. It takes some healthy soil first, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The U.S. soybean industry, you know, we strive to be a global leader in sustainability and soil health and anything to encourage yields through crop rotation, reduced tillage, cover crops, water management. One of the things we do right here personally is we raise, although it's not exactly quote unquote considered a cover crop, but we every year we have some wheat. We double crop soybeans, so you got something growing out there from October till June, and it matures. You harvest it without any chemicals and plant double crop soybeans in there. They grow all summer, and then you have a ton of residue when you harvest those double crop soybeans. So how sustainable is that?
Yeah, yeah, it's really, really cool. You can learn more about all of this by going to the Soybean Checkoff website. It is unitedsoybean.org, unitedsoybean.org. Gary, thank you. Be safe this year, all right?
All right. Thank you, Chip. Thanks for the time.
Absolutely. That is Gary Burke from Illinois. He's a United Soybean Board Director. He has served 7 years as a soybean checkoff farmer leader. I'm Chip Flory. Now, let's get back to AgriTalk.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on AgriTalk. Call us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst, is my guest here for this segment. We just wrapped up a conversation with former House Ag Chairman Colin Peterson, Democrat out of Minnesota. And Jim, I didn't hear a lot of I didn't hear much that encourages me that we're going to see a bill in 2024 from Chairman Peterson.
If the good chairman is correct, it would be ideology, Chip, because the Democrats in this case, you know, they want an issue and not a bill. But right. This House bill, Chip, is, again, far more farmer friendly than what we saw in the Senate approach yesterday. The reason I say that is specialty crops, and they're grown in a number of Democratic controlled states, and they're putting a lot of language in for specialty crops too, in the crop insurance area and other aspects. And even in the Midwest, I think the corn and soybean growers, once they, at least the ones I've talked with, who see this bill, when you compare it to the 2018 Farm Bill, it's a better to much better. So why wouldn't they want a bill? So right. I do question that as well. On the Senate approach, Chip, whenever you start your statement, as Stabenow did, is this is a serious proposal, I'm going to do cognitive framing for you here. That's not usually the case. Okay. Now, Colin was spot on when he said Southerners need a better farm bill, and he's exactly correct. And in our quick analysis so far, Stabenow's proposal falls flat to rice, peanut growers, barley to a degree, because they limit the PLC to 20% of the effective reference price. Let's cut to the chase. If that formula would have been used in 2018, the PLC rate would have been slashed, and farmers would have gotten a 12.5% decrease in payments that they received, and in 2016, a little over a 36% decrease. So you can say Southerners will not like this. Again, well, bottom line stuff, Chip. I want to see scoring of both of these bills. I want to see how much funding is in the Stabenow approach for food and nutrition, and I think that'll be an eye-opener.
Okay. So a couple of things. I want to come back to the food and nutrition, making a note there real quick. Got a comment from @LearnRon, and when I think about the conversation that we had with Chairman Thompson last week on AgriTalk, what we picked up from Chairman Peterson there, it runs counter to what Chairman Thompson has been talking about. @LearnRon said, this isn't what GT said when we met with him in person last week, pretty much the opposite as far as the timing of the bill. He's been very optimistic that somehow, some way, this farm bill was going to get done in 2024. Well, he was optimistic it would have gotten done in 23. But is optimism enough to lead this thing forward and to get it full consideration?
Well, you would think even what we're going to see in the eventual markup in the House Ag Committee, whether any Democrats vote for it. Now, they can still get it out of committee. Colin said that.
Yeah.
Then once it gets to the floor, even if you didn't have any Democrats voted for a committee, I think that they will pick up some on the House floor. Now, enough to offset what Colin said are the rebel Republicans, 15 yeah. to 20 of the caucus, your Freedom Caucus. That remains to be seen. But the more information you get on these bills, the House bill looks pretty good for production agriculture, Chip.
Wow.
And as I said, why would you want to wait until next year when the focus is going to be on our debt?
Yeah.
So I just think farm groups are going to have to answer that question. And on the thrifty food plan,
yeah.
it's not really a cut. It's that they don't want a projected further increase. Remember when Vilsack increased it by 25%. We're talking billions of dollars there.
Right.
So it's not a cut, and that's yes, they needed funding to support the Title I reference prices, and they're going to add 20 to 30 million base acres in the House bill. That's a significant change, and they're improving crop insurance, and as I said, specialty yep. crops. I don't see that as much in the Senate approach.
Well, you know, we've talked about how much homework and how much effort Chairman Thompson has put into this with a lot of field hearings and so on. And it, unfortunately, the best that we could say for Chairwoman Stabenow was that it was going to be her legacy. And we kind of expected to see some of the things that we've got in the Senate framework when it comes to specialty crops and conservation and nutrition. Those are the things that we expected to see in that Senate bill. I think we got in the House bill what we expected to see as well. A lot of farmer influence in what is in that bill. The question then becomes, as Senate Ranking Member Bozeman has mentioned in his reaction, was, listen, we got the framework out there now. We got to do a little bit of work on Title I, but other than that, let's sit and talk about this and figure out how to get enough support in the Senate to pass this bill, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll eventually going to see, because there are clear farm bill lines of demarcation between the Senate and the House. That's obvious now.
Oh, yeah.
The House bill is more farmer-friendly. The Senate is not, for production agriculture, Title I. And we're going to soon see if some Democrats want a farm bill or an issue, because I'll yep. guarantee you GT is going to have the markup, and he's going to get it to the floor, because we've got to see where the votes are.
Okay, and then once GT gets it through the House, if he gets
the
it
committee,
through
the committee first through, and then the House, and that's going to be hard.
Right.
Colin was right on. It's got to have to be a bipartisan vote, because you're going to have 15 to 20 at least Republicans could vote against this.
Right, right. But if it gets through the House... Through the House. Is that when Bozeman wants to bring his framework from the Senate side forward?
Could. I know some things I can't report. It's going to be
I'd rather
curious.
That he bring it now. Bring
well,
it now.
Well, no. It's just too soon. I think that he wants the markup to occur.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, Bozeman's going to be very important in this. And we haven't seen that for
exactly.
years from a ranking member. He's going to be the alternative to Stabenow's approach. And we're going to see whether or not that will put pressure. What you just said, Chip, is, I think, right on. If you can get it out of the House, that puts more pressure on the Senate to act.
Yes.
Now, to be an equal opportunity finger pointer, the Republicans, in my judgment, fouled up on this border security bill that the Senate passed overwhelmingly, but the House, Trump got involved on that, and they defeated it. Where Republicans got 60 to 70% of what they wanted in that border security bill, and they still voted no. You can say the same thing for this farm bill. Will it be ideology that defeats it, or right. will compromises be made? That's your bottom line there, and we're going to see.
This is interesting. What? Okay, handicap it for us now. What are the odds? Is it going to happen before 2024, in 2024?
Well, I want to see scoring, okay? But
yeah.
I'm Tom Sell, you've had him on AgriTalk. Yeah. He's about the only person in town that you can talk to that says it'll be done this year. Okay.
See, I don't think you can underestimate Chairman Thompson on this. He can force the hands on this.
Once the analysis comes out, some of the things that we pointed out today, Chip, that the media is not pointing out, they don't do, but general farm media doesn't do analysis on the farm bill. They just take the statements, you know. But when you look at this Senate farm bill, no, it's not for production agriculture. I think it's just a document that Stabenow put out to give cover for Democrats to not vote for the House bill. So we're going to see. We're going to see as more analysis comes out that House farm bill, it surprised me. It was more putting more farm back in the farm bill than I thought that they did. So we're going to see. And that's why, again, it's a rough row to hoe as far as getting those votes. But if you do facts and figures on these two bills, you're going to angle toward the House approach for production agriculture. So we're going to see. We're going to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. All right, dude. Keep working on your analysis of the bills because we're going to get you back on here tomorrow for the free-for-all. But I do want to ask you this. You only got about 20 seconds to answer it. Is it going to remain Speaker Johnson in the House?
It will. He will. And the Democrats are going to support him. And some of the Republicans are saying he's a Democratic speaker. That's bull. It's a coalition government. Who said a coalition government is bad? Bottom line.
Right. Well done, sir. Thank you so much, Jim.
Sure.
All right. That is Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer. As I said, he will be with us tomorrow for the free-for-all. Haney will be along for that conversation as well. Sean Haney from Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Obviously looking forward to that and continuing on there. Jolene Risen, president of the Iowa Corn Growers Association, is next here on AgriTalk.
The truth is hard to come by these days unless you listen to AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you were with us. Man, we have been loaded on farm policy conversation so far this morning, breaking down the House and Senate frameworks of the farm bill that are out in front of the people now and giving us an opportunity to take a look at what is going on there. Now, we also yesterday got an announcement from the Treasury Department and the IRS about the parameters of what will qualify corn for production of ethanol that could then be used in the production of sustainable aviation fuel. Let's get a reaction to that from Jolene Risen. She is the president of the Iowa Corn Growers Association. Jolene, it is great to talk with you. How are you?
I'm doing good, thanks. And yourself?
Doing just fine, just fine. Have you stayed clear of the storms over there in western Iowa?
Well, you know, that one that came a week ago Friday was within about 45 miles of my home place here. So that was close enough.
Close enough.
So, and the wild part was I was down in Omaha earlier that day on, so it was good. I mean, it was good to be back home and it was kind of scary to watch, you know, the area that the tornado was coming through because that was the area that I would have returned home through. So, So I feel for those people down there. What a mess. Luckily, I think there was only one casualty. So, I mean, we were so lucky that way because, wow, that was okay. Right. That was an amazing tornado.
Certainly was. Okay. I feel like yesterday's announcement from the Treasury and the IRS was a bit of good news and bad news all at the same time. On one hand, we got an idea of what is going to qualify. On the other hand, it seems like very few bushels are going to qualify for the 40B SAF credits this year. Is that the right take?
Yes, I agree with you 100%. And I'm just thinking in my area here, I can only think of one farmer that would qualify for that program. Yeah. So to say, you know, that program is going to move the needle is sadly wrong.
Okay.
To bundle, to tell farmers, this is the only way that we're going to accept your corn that can go for sustainable aviation fuel. I think they're missing the mark. I think there's other farming practices out there, and they need to expand on that and be less prescriptive as they are at this point.
That's exactly right. So what we learned yesterday, is that going to help in the effort from Iowa Corn, from National Corn, from corn growers in general, the ethanol industry and so on, in trying to figure out what the next adjustments to GREET should be for 45Z tax credits after January 1, 2025?
Well, hopefully they're not going to use that model that they just came out with as a template for the 45Z, because, okay. For me, it's kind of a slap in the face to farmers all over the United States, because we certainly don't all produce corn the same way. So they produce corn differently down in Texas than I do up here. And then you go north and there's different farming practices that work well in those areas to get the bushels that we need to be able to stay in business. And when you're just putting out a blanket, well, this is the way you got to do it, is wrong. As I look at that, they don't even take into account any manure, which is I don't know how much more natural fertilizer that you can get out right there. And I know the state of Iowa, we got a lot of critters, and there's a lot of manure that gets used in our fertility programs, and they're not even addressing that. I'm like, oh, just frustrated beyond belief.
Exactly. So if from Iowa Corn's perspective, Jolene, what do you want to see happen from this point? Are we talking about carbon capture and sequestration? Is that the answer here?
Well, you know what? It's like a tool in the toolbox. One way we can get there. So this program can be another way, although not nearly as effective as letting farmers, farm sustainably like we have been doing. I mean, USDA just came out with a report here, beginning or the end of the month, that the farmers are actually, carbon capture sustainability, we're under, under 10% as far as for the the carbon that we're emitting. I'm just like, why can't they understand that we are doing a great job and embrace that and let us roll and trust me, as a farmer, you're always coming up with something new. You're always trying to do better. You're always trying to, if I don't have to do this, I'm going to save money and I'm going to, and so it just all kind of snowballs. And so, it just, to me, totally shows the lack of understanding of farming in the United States, from what the USDA put out there. I don't know how else to say it. Oh, that's pretty harsh, but I'm like, wow, dudes, come on, get on board.
I hear you. And, Jolene, we haven't even talked about the documentation that's required and the preserving of the identity of that corn when it is delivered and how it's going to be used and documented going forward. There's a lot of red tape in this.
Yes. And you know what? For the ethanol plants, and that's where this documentation has to start. And then it's a contracting deal. And then the ethanol plant has, I don't know if it's an inspection process or whatever. I haven't read into it that far, but all the hoops that have to be jumped through. And then it's on the ethanol plant to keep track of all that. I'm like, wow, that's sure nice of them, but I don't know if too many ethanol plants that are going to want to sign on to that kind of program. And then two, so as I'm reading this, any carbon capture that happens on your farm and you go to that you know, then that corn doesn't qualify for anything else.
For anything else. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Jolene, so, we got to go. I'd love to get you back on and talk about this some more. Jolene Risen, president of the Iowa Corn Growers Association. Big thank you to Jolene for coming on. Come back this afternoon. Bill Lapp, AES.